Thank you, Blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America. Today is Friday, June 28, 2013. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
The Studio 7 is going out to you on 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, you can find us at www.studio7news.com or www.voazimbabwe.com.
Here are our top stories this evening. President Robert Mugabe, Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai and Industry Minister Welshman Ncube registered to contest in this year's presidential election, along with seven other candidates seeking to occupy State House.
We of ZANU-PF are very confident that we will have a landslide victory in these harmonized elections with our President Mugabe.
The Constitutional Court denies Zimbabweans in the diaspora have the right to vote in the country's forthcoming elections.
The highest court in our country is infiltrated by the people with a tendency to rig. It's a rigging strategy which has been mooted by the people in the GNU.
And the curtain comes down on Parliament midnight tomorrow with laws described as draconian by the opposition and civic groups remaining firmly in place ahead of the elections.
Ten Zimbabweans, among them unity government leaders President Robert Mugabe, Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai and Industry Minister Welshman Ncube, today registered to run in this year's presidential election in which Mr. Mugabe is seeking to extend his three-decade rule. Ivan Chifera has more details from the capital.
The nomination court opened its doors early this morning with Chief Elections Officer Lovemore Sekeramai acknowledging Mr. Tsvangirai's nomination papers that were filed in advance Wednesday. An excited MDCT Secretary General Tendai Biti told reporters outside the court that Mr. Tsvangirai is Zimbabwe's next president.
Well, we filed the president's papers, and it was such an honor to be filing the papers for the next president of Zimbabwe. Praise the Lord.
Mr. Mugabe's chief election agent, Defense Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, then arrived at the court 20 minutes after it opened to file nomination papers for his party's candidate, who is currently receiving medical treatment in Singapore. Like Mr. Biti, Mr. Mnangagwa told the media he is confident the veteran leader will lead ZANU-PF to victory in the elections.
We of ZANU-PF are very confident that we will have a landslide victory in these harmonized elections with our President Mugabe because of the progressive policies that we have put across to our people. I mean, you realize during the primaries, we had an average of 10,000 votes as coming to participate in electing or nominating candidates. Other parties were running around about 56 voters, 70 voters, but the average was 10,000.
Asked about the health of ZANU-PF's presidential candidate, Mr. Mnangagwa said Mr. Mugabe was fit, adding he is in Singapore for an eye checkup. Third in line was Regional Integration Minister Priscilla Misahera Mbwimushonga, who filed Mr. Ncube's nomination papers, effectively pouring water on grand coalition talks by parties opposing Mr. Mugabe and ZANU-PF rule. Misahera Mbwimushonga denied a party had engaged in talks to form an election coalition, adding the MDCs had only cooperated on opposing the July 31 poll date.
The discussions we've had have only been discussion about us being together around the issues of the Constitutional Court, around the issues of the electoral processes. We have not been in any meeting where anything to do with the Grand Coalition has been discussed or debated. But I'm sure Dr. Makoni may have been in one meeting, but certainly my party has never been in a meeting which has discussed the Grand Coalition.
Yesterday, Mavambo Kusile Don leader Simba Makoni announced he was pulling out of the presidential race to pave way for a coalition candidate. But one of the parties involved in the talks, ZAPU, registered its leader, Dumiso Dawengwa, to participate in the presidential elections. Then there were several candidates from small parties and independents who also approached the nomination court to file their papers. Among them are Kisnot Mkwaji of the Zimbabwe Development Party, Mutumwa Mawere and Langton Tongana, who came last in the 2008 presidential election. The court closed at 4 p.m., but is still processing some nomination papers they say did not have relevant information. Electoral Commission officials said the court will be open until midnight to allow latecomers to lodge their papers ahead of the elections. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Hurungwe MP Severino Jambadi, one of the almost 20 disgruntled MDCT MPs, tells reporter Chris Gande he submitted his papers today to stand as an independent.
Gande, there's no difference. The party has already expelled me by not conducting elections in my constituency. It has been announced by my provincial organ. And furthermore, when they visited my constituency to conduct elections, they came late two different occasions after 7 in the evening. What type of behavior is that? A part of the excellence can do that. And we complained to the national organizing as well as the vice chairperson. Up to now, they said we are coming to conduct the final election. But up to now, nothing has happened.
So in other words, are you accepting that you are no longer an MDCT member?
Whatever decision, there's no difference. There's no difference, Gandhi, to be an MDC member or not to be an MDC member.
That was Hurungwe MP Severino Jambadi.
Zimbabweans in the diaspora were today denied the right to participate in the country's forthcoming elections when the Constitutional Court dismissed an application by a South African-based Zimbabwean who wanted some sections of the Electoral Act that bar postal voting struck off the statute books. Thomas Chiripasi gives us this and more from the Constitutional Court.
Hopes for Zimbabweans in the diaspora to participate in this year's elections were today dashed following the dismissal of Tavengwa Bukaibenyu's application for sections of the Electoral Act that bar Zimbabweans living outside the country from voting to be declared unconstitutional. Bukaibenyu argued that barring Zimbabweans in the diaspora from voting violated their rights to participate in national processes. The law says only those working at the country's embassies and those on national duty outside the country are allowed to participate in elections in Zimbabwe through postal voting. But the Constitutional Court bench of 9 judges dismissed the application with reasons to follow. The ruling means that an estimated 4 million Zimbabweans living outside the country will not have a say in this year's elections that will end the unity government formed 4 years ago following the disputed 2008 polls. The court also dismissed an application filed by Gadzamoyo Dewa, leader of the newly formed Good People's Movement, who wanted today's sitting of the nomination court delayed to pave way for the completion of the ongoing mobile voter registration exercise. Dewa, who represented himself, told the court that with the mobile voter registration exercise coming to a close on July 9th, allowing today's sitting of the nomination court to proceed would result in those yet to be registered as voters failing to participate in this year's elections as candidates. The Electoral Act stipulates that one has to be registered as a voter in a particular constituency for him or her to be allowed to stand as a candidate during elections. The court said it will explain its reasons in a full judgment. Dewa told reporters after the court session that he was not happy with the manner in which the court is handling constitutional matters.
The Supreme Court, the highest court in our country, is infiltrated by the people with a tendency to rig. It's a rigging strategy which has been mooted by the people in the GNU, President Mugabe and Morgan Tsvangirai. These are the people with all the resources. They've got vehicles. They are enjoying government resources. Squandering resources so that they can get everywhere they want to get and get voters and thrash us out. And in that scheme, they are conniving with the courts of the country. And the courts are just confirming that position of surrogates.
In another election-related case that was before the same court, suspended Mutare Mayor Brian Leslie James was given the green light to contest in municipal elections. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission had barred him from submitting his nomination papers, arguing that the Electoral Act barred him from doing so as his suspension by local government minister Ignatius Chombo was still in place. James' attorney, Advocate Tabani Mpofu, argued that barring his client from participating in the council elections would violate his rights because Minister Chombo, whom he says suspended him in unclear circumstances, had not conducted an inquiry. Minister Chombo's lawyer, Mike Chimombe, said James should not be allowed to participate in this year's elections. He said allowing him to do so would not be in the public interest. Mpofu countered that, saying the 45-day period that an inquiry should have been conducted by the minister did not take place even up to now since James' suspension last year. He added that the public would not suffer any prejudice because James does not even know the allegations he is facing. The court's ruling clears the way for others in similar situations to participate in this year's polls. Reasons for the granting of the application will also be outlined in the court's full judgment. Next week, the Constitutional Court is expected to hear applications filed by Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai and Industry Minister Walsh Mengxube, leader of the smaller MDC formation, who are challenging President Robert Mugabe's proclamation of July 31st as the date of national elections. Mr. Tsvangirai and Professor Mengxube are also opposing Justice Minister Patrick Chinamasa's request to defer the polls to August 14th. Tsvangirai and Mengxube argue that key democratic reforms have to be implemented first before elections are called, in line with the resolutions of the Southern African Development Community Summit held in the Mozambican capital Maputo on June 15th. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The official dissolution of parliament automatically kicks in tomorrow, setting the stage for general elections, whose scheduling remains up in the air. Although lawmakers held their last session yesterday, the curtain will officially come down tomorrow midnight. Some parliamentarians say they are disappointed that restrictive legislation such as the Public Order and Security Act, as well as the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, were not reformed as recommended by SADC at a recent summit.
The regional body advised the Zimbabwean government to open the two pieces of legislation for debate and reform by parliament before its ending. However, that will not happen before the elections. In Siza South, Member of Parliament Siyabonga Malandu Ncube tells Ntungameli Nkomo, with the two laws still in place, the playing field remains tilted in favor of ZANU-PF.
It was the ZANU-PF strategy to delay these reforms, like the actual freeing the airwaves and the Electoral Act. It was the deliberate move by ZANU-PF, because it's always giving them the advantage. Once you remove POSA, you free the airwaves, then ZANU-PF is gone. So they use that to delay until parliament is dissolved. Then there's no one who's going to complain, and it's only the presidential powers now from tomorrow midnight.
And to what extent do you see the police applying the Public Order and Security Act in terms of restricting freedom of association and movement this time around?
Tunga, the problem is on Monday, this past Monday, I was supposed to have my primary elections. Last minute, I was advised to move my primaries to Tuesday because ZANU-PF were meant to have their primaries on Monday. Unfortunately, they had to postpone it to Tuesday. When I was again informed by the police to move my primary councillor primary elections to Wednesday, I refused. I said, I've got a copy. You said you moved from Monday, then you moved to Tuesday. So they always give ZANU-PF an advantage. Of which, that's why we're saying we're supposed to repeal this POSA thing.
In Siza South, lawmaker Siyabonga Malandu Ncube of the MDC formation led by Walsh Mengxube.
Civics groups today staged a roadshow in Bulawayo under a new campaign strategy to promote free and fair elections in the country. Dubbed Fair Fair, a loose translation from the word fair, the campaign was launched in Bulawayo yesterday evening by representatives from 50 civic groups drawn from all the country's provinces. Spokesman Thabani Nyoni for the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition says many activities have been lined up for the campaign throughout the country, including a similar roadshow in Harare Sunday.
It's essentially a campaign around galvanizing local, national and international efforts towards building a conducive environment for free, fair and credible elections in Zimbabwe. And it's mainly aimed at ensuring that there is consensus around what credible, free and fair elections are. Also aimed at ensuring that there are coordinated efforts to ensure that advocacy for a conducive environment for credible elections is created. To ensure that there continues to be a lot of spotlight on elections in Zimbabwe, considering that the regional body, SADC and the AU have been part of the guarantors of this process.
What is unique about this particular campaign? What are your action plans?
What is includes a number of activities, especially entertainment activities, theater, art, music, and so many ways of reaching out to the common, ordinary citizens of Zimbabwe so that we alert them of the fact that there is an election coming, they need to be part of that election, and they must make sure that their vote counts and they are sufficiently informed and mobilized to participate in the election. High-level engagement with policymakers, what we call duty bearers, who are part of the influencers in creating that environment. It's a multiple institution campaign. It cuts across political lines. That is why the message is fair, fair, which is a message that resonates with any language. It's within Zimbabwe. It's also a message that resonates with any age group.
That was Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition spokesman Thabani Nyoni on the line from Bulawayo. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave. In regional and international news, Egyptian Islamist parties today held demonstrations in support of President Mohamed Morsi in Cairo after a member of the ruling Muslim Brotherhood was killed in clashes between supporters and critics of the Egyptian leader. The opposition has planned rallies against Mr. Morsi in Cairo Sunday, 1 year after Mr. Morsi took office. They accused the president and his Muslim Brotherhood movement of trying to undermine secular rights and have called for an early presidential election.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas for talks on reviving Israel-Palestinian peace negotiations. Kerry held talks today with Mr. Abbas in Amman, Jordan. The U.S. diplomat plans to return to Jerusalem for more talks with Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in an effort to get both sides back to the negotiating table. Kerry and Mr. Netanyahu met over a working dinner in Jerusalem Thursday. The Israeli leader has said his country will not waver on its security concerns.
And attorneys for former Zambian President Rupia Banda planned to meet with him today to discuss reports the government had revoked his diplomatic passport. One of his attorneys, Sakwiba Sikota, says President Michael Sata's apparent decision to cancel Banda's passport is illegal and an affront to democracy. His comments followed reports in the media that the government has cancelled the former president's passport. Some Zambians attributed the reported decision to an ongoing graft investigation against the former leader by the Joint Government Investigation Team. But citing the Constitution, Sikota said the former president has not been convicted of any crime.
American President Barack Obama arrives in South Africa this evening for a three-day visit that will see him hold talks with President Jacob Zuma and African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, among others. Mr. Obama's visit started in Senegal and ends in Tanzania. An aide to Obama says the U.S. leader will touch on Zimbabwe in discussions with Mr. Zuma, who is the Southern African Development Community's mediator in Harare. Deputy National Secretary Security advisor Ben Rhodes told VOA the United States would like to see Zimbabwe holding credible elections following the successful constitutional reform exercise. He said the contrast between South Africa and Senegal and Zimbabwe were, quote, "You have deeply undemocratic practices that have been pursued in the past, very questionable elections, crackdowns on independent media and civil society."
Mr. Obama's visit to Africa has been overshadowed by the hospitalization of the critically ill former South African President Nelson Mandela. The U.S. president paid tribute to Mr. Mandela, calling him, quote, "hero of the world." He said he would let Nelson Mandela's family decide whether he would be able to visit Madiba in hospital. Political analyst and international crisis group researcher Trevor Maisiri tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Mr. Obama can only succeed in pushing for reforms in Zimbabwe if he endorses SADC's role in the crisis.
The significance of the Obama visit to South Africa on Zimbabwe is really premised on what kind of message Obama is likely to deliver to President Zuma. On one extent, if Obama is coming to pledge support for the SADC facilitation process in Zimbabwe and also for the U.S. to work behind the efforts being made by the region on Zimbabwe, then that's going to be quite significant. But however, if Obama is going to proclaim something quite different from what SADC is doing in Zimbabwe, then I think it's going to put the Americans at a divergent angle with regard to the whole of the region. So it depends really on the message that Obama is going to deliver to Zuma.
But how will it likely be received in Zimbabwe, say, if Obama pushes for more reforms?
If you look at the political parties in Zimbabwe, the MDC parties have been very much open to international involvement in Zimbabwe, whereas ZANU-PF has really been resisting any form of international involvement in Zimbabwe. Therefore, there's going to be likely some disparities between how the MTCs receive the Obama visit and messaging to South Africa from what ZANU-PF would look at. It depends on which party you are looking at, but obviously ZANU-PF is going to continue to push back on any form of international involvement in the Zimbabwean case.
Political analyst and international crisis group researcher Trevor Maisiri. President Obama will tomorrow hold a town hall meeting in Johannesburg, where he is expected to take questions on the situation in Zimbabwe and other African issues. The VOA will broadcast and digitally stream the event live.
The South African Constitutional Court has dismissed an appeal by Zimbabwe to repeal an order by the Southern African Development Community Tribunal saying Harare should compensate white farmers who lost their land during the country's land reform exercise. The SADC Tribunal ruling can be enforced by South African courts. Handing down the judgment yesterday, the South African Constitutional Court found that under SADC Tribunal protocol, Zimbabwe was obliged as a member state to enforce judgments and orders of the tribunal. The court said even though the SADC tribunal has since disbanded, South Africa, a SADC member state, can under common law enforce judgments and orders of international courts or tribunals.
Zimbabwe sought to reverse the 2010 Gauteng High Court compelling Harare to pay farmers or have its South African property attached. Zimbabwe argued South Africa could not enforce the ruling as it did not have the jurisdiction over Harare. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Director Nicole Fritz of the Southern African Litigation Center, who says judgment is monumental, but adds it will not set a precedent of enforcement of judgments between countries.
This bodes well both for those who have suffered within the SADC region and have had their rights recognized and upheld by the SADC tribunal. Obviously, those rights and their judgments can now be enforced in South Africa, but I think it also points the way to a more robust defense and incorporation of international and regional law here in South Africa.
The major question during this case was that Zimbabwe was arguing that South Africa had no jurisdiction over them and they in turn should not be able to enforce such rulings. But what does it mean if South Africa is in turn saying that they do have jurisdiction to implement these judgments?
Well, it's not jurisdiction over Zimbabwe. It's jurisdiction in respect of a judgment that was handed down by a tribunal that is recognized by South Africa, that South Africa has been a party to, that Zimbabwe itself was a party to. So, I mean, the argument that South Africa is trying to impose its jurisdiction vis-a-vis Zimbabwe is a fallacious one. It really has no merit. What South Africa has said is that the SADC tribunal was incorporated, was established by SADC member states, that they all agreed to that establishment, and that the tribunal then handed down valid decisions, and that South Africa, in terms of, you know, kind of recognized regional, international and domestic law, is entitled to recognize the rulings of those courts. So, I mean, I think whilst the judgment is important because it emphasizes the significance and integrity of international and regional human rights frameworks, no one should be under any illusion that this judgment is paving or breaking a new course. Judgments of rulings of recognized courts have always been able to be enforced in other jurisdictions.
Director Nicole Fritz of the Southern African Litigation Center in South Africa. In sports news, the Premier Soccer League is this weekend experimenting with the double-header system. Reporter Michael Cariati explains.
A double-header system is when two matches are played in the same stadium on the same day, with football fans paying the same amount they fork out to watch one Casolaga Premier Soccer League match. And for the first time since the Premier Soccer League was introduced by Chris Banda and the late Morrison Spelan in 1994, Dynamos will share a stadium with another team in a double-header at Gibbo Stadium in Chiredzi on Sunday. In an experiment of the two-match system, Dimbare will play Buffaloes, while Motor Action engage Monomtapa in matches which fans will pay only $3 to watch the Harare Giants, who normally charge $5 for the cheapest seat whenever they play. Although the Premier Soccer League used this system before the start of the season in the Net One Charity Shield, this has never been enforced in competitive matches in the 16-team Premier Soccer League Assembly. Premier Soccer League Chief Executive Officer Kenan Ndebele says the system aims to financially assist struggling teams. The struggling teams then share the same stadium and get takings with clubs which have massive following like Dynamos, Highlanders and Caps United. Ndebele said the system will help attract more fans and enable small clubs to break even financially.
Looking at those clubs that don't attract a big following. As you are aware, most of these other clubs are always running at a loss in terms of gate takings. We want to group them together and then perhaps that will also attract more fans and then they can break even.
Ndebele said clubs like Dynamos and Highlanders resisted the deal, claiming they have enough support to financially sustain themselves.
So for the crowd pullers, obviously at the meeting, they were not comfortable with sharing gate revenue with other clubs, which at times they call them small teams, but our teams are all equal.
Ndebele says there won't be any problems in the sharing of the proceeds as the Premier Soccer League handled the gate takings before they are dispersed to clubs. Small teams in the Premiership have been experiencing serious financial problems due to low crowd attendances. Some have even failed to pay their players. Ndebele says the latest developments could work well for those teams. The Bank ABC Super 8 tournament, which involves only the top 8 teams from the previous soccer season, is making a return to Zimbabwean football after dropping off the calendar last year. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Now we recap today's top stories. President Robert Mugabe, Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, and Industry Minister Oshime Ncube registered to contest in this year's presidential election, along with 7 other candidates seeking to occupy State House.
The Constitutional Court denies Zimbabweans in the diaspora the right to vote in the country's forthcoming elections.
And the curtain comes down on Parliament midnight tomorrow with laws described as draconian by the opposition and civic groups remaining firmly in place ahead of the elections.
That's our broadcast for this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris and Ntungamili. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Sitandekile Mhlanga. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk, where we will talk about today's Supreme Court decision denying Zimbabweans